We're going to start at the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Bet by the two dots. Gemara makes a statement: Shlosha lekuchot mitztarfim. The fact that three purchasers came in mitztaref to generate the 3 years that you need. What's the case here? The case is that we have an individual who claims it's his property. Reuven says, "I bought it from this individual." Then Shimon says, "I bought it from Reuven," and Levi bought it from Shimon. So you have three parties, each of which stayed there for 1 year. So now between the three of them, you have, right, a chazakah. You have the 3 years of chazakah. Now the individual whose land it is, what's his claim? His claim is that, listen, you guys were too scared to stay here. So that's why you moved every year. I mean, that if you really were, thought you could own the property, you would have stayed here over the whole period. The reason I didn't object over this period of time is because you guys were so scared that every year you left and someone else came here.
But
so,
what's their claim?
That we purchased it.
All three of them together should have failed.
No. One from the next, successively. They did it. Levi bought it from Shimon. Shimon bought it from Reuben. And Reuben bought it from...
The third guy says, listen, you were in the whole half of 3 years. That's what he said.
Right, they all. Right? I mean, they come together as a package. Yes, the Levi who's on it right now says you weren't Mocha for 3 years, and I bought it from Shimon, Shimon bought it from Reuben, and Reuben bought it from you. And between the three of us, we've been here 3 years, and you haven't said anything.
And the last two had started to stop.
Right, well, that's right. That's going to be 1 second. The Gemara is going to discuss that.
Although his Tana isn't that I was here for 3 years.
No.
His Tana that you weren't Mocha for 3 years.
Right, or right, but I was, people I purchased it from and me have been here for 3 years, and so yeah. Yes, exactly. That you had a chance over these 3 years to object, and you never did. So that's his claim. Now, but the problem is obviously that he's right. The machzik has a good claim, which is that you guys were running away from an outsider who's looking at this situation. He just sees three guys, different guys, each year come in here. Why does he have to do? Why should he have to be mocha? There's nobody staying on his property for 3 years. So that's Rav's qualification. This is what Gedalia just mentioned, which is Amarav Chulam Bishtar. That they all have to have a shtar. Now, obviously, it's not the first guy who has a shtar. Reuven doesn't have a shtar, because if Reuven has a shtar, there's nothing to talk about anymore, because he bought it from the owner, and he has a shtar here, so then there's nothing to talk about. So he doesn't have a shtar, but the other two subsequent have a shtar. Why does that matter? Because the shtar has a kol, and therefore the owner of the property knows that his property was sold. These aren't three separate individuals who are showing up on the land. These are individuals who are coming from the power of the previous individual. In that Reuven, who showed up there the first year, and then there's a shtar written that says Reuven sold it to Shimon, and then another shtar that we have that says that Shimon sold it to Levi, that means that the owner was aware of the fact that they weren't leaving every year, but rather this was a chain of people who had a relationship, which is a buyer-seller relationship, and therefore they weren't leaving because they were afraid to stay, they were leaving because they sold it and they contracted on it. So based on that, Rav says, but with the qualification of Rav, we say that there is a chazakah established here if you have shtarot, because the machzik, the person who owns the land, should have known about it. If he should have known about it, now he has 3 years of a single entity that was there for 3 years, and he didn't say anything. So he's lost his rights over here. So Mara says, lememra, the sover Rav shtar it lekala, ve'edim let leku kala. The basic premise of Rav's position, the underlying assumption in Rav's position, is that it only works when you have a shtar. It doesn't work if you have a din. And that's Rav qualified. He says, only when there's a shtar do we assume or we expect the owner, right, the original owner, to know about the fact that there was a transaction here. But if there was just a din, meaning that they sold it with a din, we would not assume or we would not expect the original owner to know about that transaction, and therefore we will not penalize him for not objecting. He'll just, from the outside, again, he looks like three people, three different people, no connection, sat on his land, and that's not a chazakah. Chazakah is when someone as continuous 3 years stays there, that's how you establish a chazakah, and to him it wasn't continuous because he didn't know about the transactions. So that's basically what we say from Rav. The Gemara says, Vahama Rav. Din Rav say, Amochas adeh be'edim, goveh minachasim shuvda be'edim. That a person who purchases a property with edim, now with edim, he's purchasing the property with achrayut, meaning means that he has recourse. If the property is taken away from him, then he's allowed to go and take from nechasim mishubadim. The basic difference between, right, we'll get to this much later in the Masechta, but here the basic difference between the ability to take from nechasim mishubadim and bnei chorin is whether the subsequent purchasers of the property or the subsequent owners of the property should have known about the first transaction. So that here he sold a piece of his land. Reuven sells a piece of his land to Shimon. And now, after a while, Shimon's land was taken away by a creditor, by some whatever reason it was taken away from him. He comes back to Reuven and says, you owe me the money. So now Reuven says, I have no more land left. I sold all my land. I did this. So now Shimon has a right to go after the subsequent buyers of Reuven's land because he was the first one there. And he can go after the land. Why can he go after those subsequent buyers? Because they knew. They knew about the first transaction. So when they came and they purchased the property, they have to either know that, assume that that's in the risk and pay for it with the risk in there, or leave over property for Reuven so that they won't come after them first. I mean, that they have to leave him with enough property that there's something else for them to take for. And the fact that he didn't, right, is their loss. So now, what do you see from this? Rav is suggesting that a sadeh, that a field that was sold simply with edim, there's enough information out there that if you were a subsequent buyer, that we will assume that you knew about that transaction. And therefore, you lose if the first buyer now has to come and make a claim and take away your property. No problem. So Mar says, how do we reconcile between Rav? So Mar says, Hotam lekuchot, inu afsididu av nafshayu. Right, so you are talking about two different parties over here. But I would describe it as the easiest way to describe it, although this is not what the Rashbam says. We'll see inside the Rashbam adds a twist to this. There's a difference between someone actively seeking information and someone passively receiving information. That's the basic difference. We saw that difference a little bit before also in the Gemara. That over here, where the lukuchot, the buyers or subsequent buyers are coming, they have to do a title search. They have to go and search out information, whether there were previous transactions. They're actively involved, right, in purchasing, and we're going to say that your obligation is to check into the fact that there were no previous transactions. In that instance, we'll say that edim are sufficient to create enough of a call that if you look around and you look into it or investigate it, that you'll know there was a previous transaction. Whereas, when we're talking about the original owner being mocheh and objecting to a party's being there, he's a passive recipient of information. He doesn't actively go out and search for information. The whole idea of a mocheh is that he will find out about the fact that there are people there, and therefore he has to be mocheh. Now, when you're just finding out information, it means that there's no active obligation, you're just passive, and passively, information like this won't reach you. So that's the difference, basically. Rav will say that when it comes to active pursuit of information, both a shtar and a deem are sufficient to create a kol, and you'll know about that. Whereas when you are simply passive, and the information has to reach you, meaning that you are the original owner and you have to find out that there was a transaction that went on to make them into a single entity, that we will not assume happens, that the information reaches you in a passive form. Because there, shtar will be enough, but edim will not be enough. Shtar will be enough of a kol, but edim will not be enough of a kol.
How would you read the Gemara? Explain the Gemara based
on what it says. So now, hotam, lekuchot, inu dafsido nafshayu. Lekuchot themselves caused their own loss because they didn't do sufficient investigation. If they had done a proper investigation before they took it, they would have known about this transaction. Because, again, if you actively pursue the information, it will be there to find out about it. Right? As opposed to, right, the individual who is supposed to be mocheh, over here supposed to object, if he simply lives his life and doesn't hear about it, we don't expect, because there was a transaction they deemed, for him to find that information to flow or to
passive,
reach him.
He was a massive nashayah.
Right, exactly. He remained passive. Now, that Rashbam says something that is not, says something more. I'm saying to you the simplest way to explain the Gemara. The Rashbam adds a little twist and says that the question about, if you look at the top Rashbam, Mem Bet Amud Aleph, he says that, Inu afsidu nafshayu, deshadu zuzayu bichti. They threw away their money. They should have looked into it. They should have done a proper title search. They should have done a proper investigation. To know if there was any property sold with recourse before them. And that's not what they did. Therefore, they caused, right, themselves their own loss. The case where the three purchasers of the land, right, of this other supposedly owner's land, the me'arer should not lose because of that. The keva de leka shtar b'mechirut olo, since there were no contracts on these sales, velo yatsa hakol. Right? And so therefore there's no, you know, grapevine, rumor, or, right, information flow that he should have known. Memela lo haya lo lachkor. He didn't have an obligation to look into it. De emeimar amar. He has an excuse. Lefish yireim lachzik pekarka sheli. Right? They were afraid to, stand my property. Therefore, every guy left after a year. So what the Rashbam says is that there really is an obligation on the Ma'arer to look into something. Both the Ma'arer has an obligation to look into it, as well as a subsequent buyer. The reason the Ma'arer does not have to look into it here is because he has a way to explain the activities that don't make it or don't make an obligation on him to look into it. If he sits back and he says, yes, I saw three people live there, but I thought they were too scared to stay. Each one left after a year. So because of that, he can say, I don't have an obligation to look into it because I have an explanation for what was happening. Meaning, but otherwise, what the Rashbam is saying, that he does have an obligation. I would have thought that a Marer in general has no obligation to look into things. He can always remain passive. And then when the information flows to him, then he has to deal with it. So if we expect the information to flow to him, he has to deal with it. If not, what the Rashbam is saying is, if he sees something suspicious and he doesn't look into it, then it is afsida nafshahu, that he's lost out because he didn't look into it. And that there is an obligation on the Ma'arer to look into it when there's suspicious activity. If he can explain away the activity, then that's no longer suspicious and he doesn't have any obligation to look into it. It's a little twist, but does place some obligation on the Ma'arer to look into it when he doesn't have a way of explaining it. And now the Gemara says, Vatanan. All right, this is all, Mi Amar Rav Hachi, can you really say this? Vatanan, we have a Mishnah further on. Someone who sells or contracts, right, to buy property with a contract, right, then you can take away in the end, if the property is taken from him, right, if there's recourse here, you can go after nechasim shubadim. Ayedeyedim, gove minechasim b'nei chorin. It's an explicit Mishnah. Yeah, what? There's a difference between shtar and edim when it comes to mechira. We just said according to Rav, there is no difference. Between in Mechira, there's no difference between Edim and Shtar. You can take from encumbered property. You have a right when you have recourse to go after that property. And here we have an explicit Mishnah that differentiates between Edim and Shtar. So now Rav has his statement, Edim and Shtar are equal. And we have Mishnah says they are not equal. So Bechitemus, what are you going to say? Rav Tano Poliku, right? That Rav is a Tano. So Rav can argue on a Mishnah. It's no problem. Rav disagrees with that Mishnah. If that's the case, right? Vaha, Rav Ushmol da Amrei Tavayu. Problem is that we have another statement from Rav, which is Milve Alpe Enu Gove Lo Mina Yorshim Velo Mina Kuchot. There you go. God bless you. And an oral transaction means with Edim. We're assuming, right, with Edim, without Ishtar, you can't go after the Kuchot. You can't go after subsequent buyers. What does that tell you? No Mishubadim, right? For someone who has it. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Milve azvine karamit? You're talking about two apples and oranges here. You're talking about loans and you're talking about purchases. Right, those are two different issues. When it comes to milve kika yosef, right, or milve kika yosef, besinaka yosef. When a person borrows money, they try to borrow money in the quietest way possible. Why? Because otherwise people know he's desperate for cash. And then if he has to sell property, if he has to do other things, they know that he's under pressure, under duress. So under duress, they're going to lower the prices. So a person, if he has to go into debt, if a person has to extend, you know, take out credit, he tries to do it in the quietest way possible. You know, meaning that over the last year, we really saw that that experience, that when it became public that banks or other institutions needed to borrow money, then everybody pounced on them. They knew that they were in distress and that they had to, right, it caused a waterfall effect on the institutions. So the same thing here. A person wants to borrow, he does it in the quietest way possible because he doesn't want anybody to know about it. On the other hand, when it comes to Vine, Manda Zavin Arab, if I see Zavin, Kechad Lipekala Kala. So now you could read this one of two ways. Right? It's not, I would have read it the other way. I know that the Rashbam does not read it this way, but it could be here that it's the seller or the buyer has an interest, right, in the transaction being public, right? Because the buyer wants it to be public because he wants to know that the ownership has changed, right? He wants to know, or either that he is, you know, he's moving into town, there's a new guy, but also that he wants to know that it's changed hands. It could be that the seller wants it to be public because he wants buyers to show up. I mean, he wants other people to show up. He wants to get the best bid on the property. So he wants to know when he's selling the property and out there that it's well known he's selling the property, so he gets the best bid on the property. So I would have suggested that it was in our situation that it's the buyer who wants it because he wants it to be known. The Ashbam says the other way around, that it's the seller that wants to make it public in order that the... The buyer. All right, so here we got from Bucky McTowie.
He doesn't want
to answer
the table.
He wants it
on the table. So.
The buyer wants to be quiet, yeah. So the seller is the one who wants the public. All right, so here we go. So it's right, so if he wants to sell the property, then if he wants to sell the property, that lukuchim will come and purchase the property, or they have a lot of bidders on the property. So now, based on that differentiation, we can understand the difference in the situation. Meaning that if you have a milveh, if you have a loan, right, then one has a contract, one has a shtar, right, then it is a public issue, which we'll see, I'll show you in a second why that is a public issue. But, so then you will say that there's an obligation for someone to know about it. Or that if a lukuchot come afterwards, then they lose on their own. Whereas when it's a contracted, when it's done by Edim, then we say that it was quiet because he tried to borrow it quietly and there are only Edim involved. So then we say, no, that we don't place an obligation on the individuals to know this. Whereas when it comes to mechira, when it comes to selling, since there's one of the parties is interested in having it be public, and whether it's done with shtar or whether it's done with eidim, we're going to assume the information is out there. The information is being passed along. So that's the differentiation. Now why, what is the difference between shtar and eidim? Why is it by shtar we assume that the information is public and by eidim? I mean, all shtar has is two eidim on it. I mean, why is the shtar better than a eidim? So the Rashbam over here writes, it's on the previous Amud, he writes in a Mem Aleph and Mem Bet, he says, shtar yitlei kala why? Shemit asfim lekotvo ulechotmo v'kol shomim. It's like there's a, you know, like a signing party. It's like everybody gets together so they can write it and then they can sign it. And so there's a lot of, I don't know, what do you call it, hubaloo. There's like all this, and I guess in those days that was an event that when they had some sort of document that they had to write and to sign it, that there was some sort of event surrounding it. You know, not like today where you just print out a standard document and sign it. I don't know if that's the shtar hazakala. Right? Today you'd have to actually register it. I mean, basically that would be the equivalent today is that if you register it with the city, then the person has an obligation to go find out that it was there. So there is a call by a shtar that doesn't exist by Edim. So now, based on that, we'll have the conclusion of the Gemara here, which is Milveh and Mecher are different. And because of that, by mecher, right, we're going to place an obligation on the individual to find out about the information, but only when he's an active pursuer of the information, which is he's a lokeach, he's a purchaser. But if he's a passive recipient of the information, even in the cases of mecher, we'll still see there's a differentiation between shtar, where he will find out about the information, and edim, where he won't find out about the information, and he can explain away the three individuals being on his property as being too scared to stay there for the 3 years. And that's what the Gemara said, that three lekuchot are mitzdaref to be a good chazakah. When there's starot between each one of them, which creates the calls that he should have known that they are a single entity because of the starot, because of the mecha that took place. All right. Tan Rabbanan. Achla ha'av shana v'ben shtayim ha'av shtayim v'ben shana. So what happens if you have a father and son, right, who are on a property or claim to have bought the property. The father ate it for 1 year and the son ate it for 2 years. Or the father ate it for 2 years, the son 1 year. Av shana, or ben shana. Then they have a father ate it for 1 year, the son ate it for another year. Balokeach shana. And the purchaser from the son ate it for 1 year. Harizu chazaka. All of these are a good chazaka. You've had 3 years on there. Now, a father and son are considered to be a single entity. Right, the way the Rashbam phrases is Yoresh Karei Davuahu, meaning the equivalent of Ubar Yerachimo, right, that a fetus is an extension of the mother. A Yoresh, an inheritor, is an extension of the father. We see them not as two separate entities, but as a single entity when it comes to this issue. So now, the Memra, the conclusion from this Braisa is the Lokeach It Leikala, that a purchaser has a call. Why? Because we say, what happened here? We have a father and a son. Father and son, we say, you gotta know about that. They're a single entity. You can't say, oh, the father was there a year, the son was there a year, they were too scared to be there. No. You view them as a single entity. The father and son are there, you have 2 years. But the third year was generated by a lokeach, by a purchaser from the ben. So we have to assume now that the owner should have been ma'arer because he knew about the father, the son, and the lokeach. That means that he knew that there was a transaction here. So Rimini, is that really true? Achla b'fnei av shana u'fnei ben shtayim. So now the situation is reversed, where you have the machzik, right, who is eating it before the father the first year, b'fnei ben shtayim, and then in front of the son for 2 years, or b'fnei av shtayim u'fnei ben shana. I mean, as opposed to they are the machzik here, they are the ones who are the original owners, and now someone else has been on the property for those years, 3 years, but they weren't all 3 years, it was not owned by the same entity, it was owned partly by the father, partly by the son. You still look at that as good chazakah. B'fnei av shana, b'fnei ben shana, b'fnei lokeach shana. If this person stayed on the land for 3 years, in that 3 year period, there was a father who owned it, then the son owned it in the second year, and then a purchaser bought it and owned it the third year. So you have three different owners, but they're all one continuum, right? Because it's a father, a son, and then a buyer from the son. And this individual lived there all those 3 years and nobody threw him off. So his Gemara says, wait a minute. And if that's the case, harizu chazaka, it's good chazaka. If you think that a purchaser has a kol, right, that a transaction that happens, everybody knows about it. There's no greater macha than selling the property. If you're the original owner and you go ahead and transact on the property, what are you saying? You're demonstrating ownership over the property. There's no greater macha than to say, I have a contract that I sold the property after 2 years. I mean, so the underlying assumption in this second brisa is what? That they didn't hear about it. That the transaction is not something that is well known. Since it would not be known to the machzik of the property, then if the obligation, the reason it works as a chazakah here is because there's no mecha, and the father, son, lokeach should have been aware. They knew this guy was there, and they didn't say anything. So they're one continuum, and it's a good chazakah, and the guy who lived there, or the machzik, doesn't know that there was a sale to know that there was any objection. There was no call. So now you have two brayta. One brayta says that a lokeach, that's well known. Someone purchases a property, it's well known. And therefore you can establish, right? You can establish a chazaka, you can establish a chazaka that way. If you have a father, son, and then a lokeach who are on one property, you can establish a chazaka because there's a call and the owner, original owner should have known about it. Then you have a second brayta that says the other way around, which is that if a machzik's on the property and you have a father, son, and lokeach who owned the property over that period of time, we don't expect the lokeach to have known about the transaction. I mean, the machzik to known about the transaction. And therefore, it's a good chazakah. So you have a braisa, steer in the braitot, between whether a lokeach is well known and a lokeach is not well known. What's the easiest answer, which the Gemara does not give? The easiest answer would be what we just said in Rab before. What's the answer? It's the difference between shtar and edim. You could have answered that one braisa is talking about that it was a mechira with edim, and one is talking about it's mechira with shtar. If it's a mechira with shtar, it has a kol. And if it's mechira with edim, it doesn't have a kol. That would be the easiest answer. The Gemara does not give that answer because they have a better answer. What's the answer? That the sale in that case was not a sale of this particular property. It was a sale of the individual who says, "I'm selling you all my property." Right? That's what he said. I sell you all my property. Right. So now, when the individual comes back and he says, the buyer of the property comes back and says, "Well, this is included in all the property that he owned, the one that this machzik is sitting on." He goes, "What are you talking about? I lived here for 3 years, right? I purchased it from the father, and it was, I was here while the father for a year, I was here with the son of the year, and after you bought it, I've been here a year. What's to talk about?" He says, "No, but I bought it from him, and this is one of his properties." He says, "Too bad. Because there's no call. Why is there no call? Because there's no mecha," meaning that there may be a call about the fact that it was purchased, but there's no mecha there because he didn't specify that particular property. He said, "I sold all my property." The owner said, "I sold all my property." This is not defined in the contract anywhere that this is a piece of property. So the machzik that's there, there's no mecha for him because there's no objection to this. If he sold that particular land, that's a mecha because he's demonstrating ownership. By selling all my property, I don't demonstrate ownership under any particular piece of property because I haven't defined what I am selling. So that's the answer of the Gemara. The answer of the Gemara is that yes, ein ochanami, that in general, a lokeach is leikala, that there is a call for a lokeach. In this particular case, there is no call because it was a generic sale rather than a sale of the particular property. All right, new Mishnah. Omnim v'ashutfim v'arisim v'abitropim ein lahem chazaka. So here you have parties or individuals who have a relationship that precedes their attempt to take control of the land. So when you have these individuals, you cannot establish a chazakah as these individuals because there's another reason why you've come into possession of the property. You have possession or you're there on the property not because you necessarily purchased it, but because you have a relationship with the owner of the property. What's that relationship? The one could be an uman. Now, uman is a craftsman. A craftsman, when we're talking about the ownership here, we're not talking about land, obviously. We're talking about metaltalin. By metaltalin, what establishes a chazakah by metaltalin? Right? As opposed to land where you need shloshanim? Possession. Exactly, right? A mukhzak b'davar is classified as the owner. That's why we always assume a motzi mechavero lavaraya. Whoever is mukhzak in the davar, you have to extract it from them. You have to bring proof. To burner proof is on you. So now an uman, who... Right, there's a couple of exceptions to the rule. But here, if you're mukzak in a davar, what it's the uman has an item. He says, "This individual sold it to me." So we say that that's not a good chazaka. Why? Because this uman generally has these items, and people would give it to them to fix. So the individual says, I gave it to you to fix. So if he comes and says, I bought it and it's in my possession, that doesn't give him any rights. It doesn't give him any chazakah here, because we have an explanation of why he's in possession of it without establishing any chazakah. So obviously, the exception, one exception that Shaul points out are dvarim, right? Other exceptions, we have items where it's muksakah, nitan hashil maskir. Items that people normally lend out or rent out. Those items, even if you're mukhzak in them, doesn't mean you have a chazakah, because people normally lend these items and normally rent these items out. So again, we can explain why you have possession of the item without it being a mechira, without it being a sale. So now an uman, right, cannot establish a chazakah. It's interesting, if he has to purchase something, then he really probably has to contract and have evidence of it, or edim, real, you know, solid evidence, because of this, he's unable to establish chazakah through ownership. Now, shutzvim, partners, two partners jointly on a property, the other partner says, listen, I was on your property for 3 years, and we'll see in the Gemara the different ways to establish what that means, if he has it for 3 years. So why can't you establish a chazakah? Because the other partner says, the reason you're on my property is because we're partners. Right? So I let you go on my property. I was a makpid. You had rights to go. We had permission. We'd go on each other's properties. So that's why you were there. Arisim, honestly, he was hired to be a sharecropper. If he's hired to be a sharecropper, then being there for 5 years as a sharecropper doesn't establish a chazakah. The whole point of you being there is that you're an aris, right? You're not an owner. Babi Tropin is, when it comes to an estate, you have some sort of executor to the estate. He's appointed to be an executor and act on behalf of those individuals. He can't establish a chazakah because he's there. Because the whole reason he's there is because he is the executor of the estate. He's executor of the estate. That's why he's there and doesn't come as a right. So, ein lahem chazakah. Now, lo ish chazakah b'nechse ishto. A man cannot establish a chazakah in his wife's property or his wife's possessions. Velo ishal a chazakah b'nechse bala. Which the Gemara will ask is pshita. Of course not. And again, their relationship as husband and wife are what are entitling them to be on the property, not the fact that they purchased it from one another. Right? V'lo av b'nechse ben, v'lo ben b'nechse av, a father and son, again, have such a relationship where their being on the property would not establish rights of ownership, because again, the people are mochel when an individual, a person is not makpid that his father is on his property, a person is not makpid that his son is on his property, and therefore you could see them being on the property even without owning the property. And therefore it doesn't establish a chazakah, or you can have the other individual won't be mocheh, because he doesn't feel necessity to be mocheh in that case. Right.
In the case of Megas, it's not one of these scenarios where we say that during the course of the 3 years that he has to, declare that the person is there just as an aris, not as an aris.
Right, so here, that is correct. He should have to be mocheh, but here the individual agrees that he was an aris. He says, I originally was an aris, and probably then I bought it and I stayed. So there he can't establish a chazakah that way, because he originally entered the property as an aris. We don't say that the 3 years help him out after that point in time. He can't change his status from aris to owner, right, without a contract. And without a contract, he needs chazakah, and a chazakah will not be established if he went that originally as aris. When is this all established? B'machzik. Now, this is an interesting problem, that the term chazakah in the Mishnah and in the Gemara is used in two different forms. Chazakah is used, like we have in our parak, which is to establish ownership. Right, it's a replacement for a shtar. It's a way to determine ownership. There's also another chazakah, which is that property, real property, can be bought with kesef, shtar, and chazakah. Over there, chazakah does not mean the same chazakah that we have over here. There, chazakah is, right, some activity that establishes ownership over the property. It's not the duration of time, but it's rather some sort of activity that demonstrates ownership over the property to get a kinyan over the property. So that's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, yes, we know that there are these two definitions. Don't mix them up. So that's what the Mishnah is about to say. Now here we're talking about someone's established ownership by being there for the 3 year period. Person who gives a gift, or brothers that's divided up their father's property and they want to lock in the division. Someone who takes possession, nichseger are hefker. Someone who establishes ownership over hefker. Now the gadar uparatz koshu arizu chazaka. Right? What do you have to do? You have to do one of these activities. What is it? You have to na'al, which is emphasis machlokes bishonim, which you have to do. Whether you have to actually put on a lock, or you have to lock the gate, right? One of those two. Vigadar, you fenced up an area that was not fenced before. Or paratz, you broke down a fence or a wall in some area that wasn't fenced before. Koshu, if you do any of that, arizu chazakah. Now this chazakah, again, is not a chazakah of, it's a chazakah of ownership, but ownership through kinyan. I mean that you're establishing the ownership because your chazakah is a kinyan, or makes the kinyan over the property. Not chazakah because you're there for a duration of time. That's what the Gemara says. But that the Mishnah is saying, don't mix these two definitions of chazakah up over here. We're talking about in the first half of the Mishnah, we're talking about chazakah for duration over a period of time. Second half of the Mishnah, we're talking about you want to establish ownership, you want to make a kinyan, right? That chazakah happens immediately, kol shehu, but that's a different form of chazakah. Don't mix the two up.
And then what, then he doesn't need 3 years?
He will, that, yeah, he needs a shtar, he needs some other form of proof. I mean, that this is, this a kinyan, this all it does is makes a kinyan on the property.
Yeah, it's not a proof that, it's not considered a machal.
No, no. The chazakah, it would be a machal. It would be a machal. If he comes, if the owner of the property comes and knocks the fence down, it would be a machal. Right, from the buyer's point of view, this doesn't establish chazakah. He still needs a shtar, but this is a form of kinyan, and that's what the mission is differentiating between. Right now. I'm sorry? Right, right. So, Avua de Shmuel v'Levi. So, it's not that Shmuel and Levi are brothers, but the father of Shmuel and Levi, right? These are two separate people. Tanu, their Mishnah read, Shutaf ein lo chazaka. In the list that they have in their Mishnah, Shutaf ein lo chazaka. V'chosh kein uman. And certainly an uman cannot establish a chazaka. I mean that uman might have not been, was not written in their Mishnah. So they said that shutaf doesn't have chazakah, and it's a koshkin that uman can't. Why? Because shutafim, you could see them coming into possession. We'll see in a second why they can come into possession of each other's property. But uman certainly cannot establish a chazakah. So neither of them work. Shmuel tani uman. Shmuel's Mishnah read with an uman in the list, but not a shutaf. So an uman ain't no chazakah, ava shutaf yesh lo chazakah. Partners can't establish a chazakah. Mean that an uman cannot establish a chazakah, but partners can accept a why is that? But as though Shmuel to Tamei. Shmuel is according to his own shita, which is Damar Shmuel, Hashutafim machzikim ze al ze, umeidim ze al ze, nasim shomei sachar ze al ze. That shutafim have an arm's length relationship. Since they have an arm's length relationship, therefore, they can be machzik ze al ze. You can establish a chazakah, meaning that ownership can be established. You won't need a shtar after 3 years. Right? Umeidim ze al ze. They can testify on behalf of each other that they own the property. And they are classified as shomei sachar, meaning that if I watch something on, meaning in the partnership, if I watch something for the partnership, then I can trade that when you watch the something else for the partnership, that there's a sachar here. And that when I watch something for the partnership, I'm giving you some sort of value. And that value makes me into a shomer sachar, because you're going to have to, when you return it, you're going to have to watch something for me on my behalf. That makes each of us a shomer sachar over the property. It's not that we're shutafim, we're owners, and that's why we're shomerim over the property. If we have something in the partnership and I leave it with one of the one of the partners takes it, he's a shomer sachar on that. He's not just an owner over it. He becomes a shomer sachar because of this trade-off between them. So Shmuel says it's all arm's length. The whole thing is an arm's length transaction. So because of that, you can establish a chazakah on the property, meaning that if I live on my partner's property for 3 years, say there's a 50-50, we have a split, I live on the whole land for 3 years, that means that I can say that he sold me his half of the partnership, and I don't need a shtar anymore, because I established a chazakah on that according to Shmuel. Because you don't have a right, quote-unquote, to be there, because shutafim are seen as two separate entities. They're seen at arm's length transaction. Ramile, Rabbi Abba, the Rabbi Yehuda, Bim. Here it says me'arta, I think the better girsa, which the Bach went down, is me'atzarta, to pay Rabbi Zakkai, right, at the gathering, right, at the shir of Rabbi Zakkai. Mi'ar mashmol shutaf yesh lo chazakah. Did Shmuel really say that? That a shutaf has the ability to establish a chazakah with his partner. Why? Bar mashmol shutaf yoreid b'shutami. That a shutaf who goes down to his partner's property is as if he's entering with permission. So I mean, if you're entering with permission, that by definition means you can't establish a chazakah. The whole idea of chazakah is adverse possession, which is that you are there when you're not supposed to be there, according to the owner, the original owner. And if you're there when you're not supposed to be there, then you can establish a chazakah by being there for 3 years. But now, if you have permission to be there, then the owner doesn't have an obligation to do a machah, to object. Why? Because he doesn't think you're there illegally. If he doesn't think you're there illegally, then his objection, he doesn't feel a need to object, and therefore his lack of objection is not establishment of a chazakah. So Shmuel here makes a statement that a shutaf is kiyureit b'shutami. Lav the memro, the shutaf ain't no chazakah. What would be the conclusion? If you say a shutaf can go there with permission, that means that you cannot establish a chazakah. So v'stira in Shmuel's position. Where it says, lo kasha. Ha denachet l'kula, ha denachet l'palga. Depends, the partner, what he did. Did he take possession of the full property, or did he take possession only of the half property? And now, which is which? So it says, Amrila Hala Hagisa, Amrila Hagisa. Which is, how do we explain each side of this? So now the Gemara says, basically we have a, Shmuel makes two statements. One statement says that a shutaf can establish a chazakah, and one statement says that a shutaf cannot establish a chazakah. The Gemara says the difference is between whether he took the whole property or he took the portion of the property. So now the Gemara, which is which? So the Gemara says it could go either way. So let's explain each one of them. If he takes possession of, we'll explain it one way. If he takes possession of the whole property, let's say then he can establish a chazakah. Why? Because a shutaf has a right to go down there, but that's to his half of the property. But when he goes to, it takes the whole property. For the next 3 years, he takes the whole production of the whole property. For the next 3 years, he works the property, he's the only one on the property. Clearly, he's establishing a chazakah there. Where's the other partner? No partner lets his other partner for 3 years straight take the whole thing. Now, if he goes down for palga, Palga means that they divided the property up 50-50, and he's on 50% of the property, but he's on the 50% that belongs to the other partner. So there we say, no, you don't establish a chazakah over there. Why? Because partners do have that type of deal. They will switch off every 3 years or every 5 years. They divide the property up and say one part of the property does a little better, has a little better production. So listen, you take it for the first 5 years at 50, and then at the 5 year mark, we'll switch, and you go take that half, and I'll take that half. So since that's a normal way that shutaf, right, or shutafut exists, you're being on that half for 5 years to establish no chazakah over there, because that's a normal way of a partnership. Now obviously, the reverse is going to be the same thing. What's classified as normal and not normal? So then the Gemara says, Hagisa, what's the Hagisa? That when he takes possession of the whole property, that's normal in partnerships. Right, they split the years. You take the first 3 years, I'll take the next 3 years. I take the first 5 years, you'll work the whole property, I'll take the next 5 years. So that's normal in partnerships. So since that's normal in partnerships, you cannot establish a chazakah. As opposed to the 50-50, nobody allows, when you have a partnership, to take the better 50% for 5 years. Right? Nobody's going to say, you should, for the first 5 years, you take the better 50%. No. If they have 50-50, he's going to make them switch every year. He's going to make them switch more often in order that this guy doesn't end up doing exactly that, taking the better 50 and saying, I own that 50%. So again, it all has to do with your view of what's normal in partnerships. And based on what your view of normal partnerships, Shmuel will say that either if you take half or you take a whole, that does establish a chazakah or that does not establish a chazakah. The basic principle, basically what's laid out here by Shmuel, is what's normal. I mean, in whatever, you have to look at what normal partners would do. If it's within the confines of what, or within the definition of what normal partners would do, you cannot establish a chazakah that way, because they're acting like partners are acting. If he does something that's unusual, and that's not documented in their partnership, document, they do something that's not the minhag of partnerships, then you can establish a chazakah, because you've done something that is not normal for partnerships, and that itself is an establishment of a chazakah. So Gemara says, Ravina Amar, Hava Hada Nachi Bekula. Ravina says, no, that both cases of Shmuel, both statements of Shmuel have to do with going down for the entire property. Velokash. So what's the difference in Shmuel's opinion there? Hada Yit Beit Din Chaluka, Hada Let Beit Din Chaluka. It's very simple. Can the property be subdivided or not? Right? If the property can be subdivided, then his being on the whole property establishes a chazakah. Why? Because he shouldn't have been on the whole property. How did he let him be there for 5 years on the whole property, or 3 years on the whole property, when the property could have been subdivided? What would have been the better solution to the partnership? To have them each take 50% of it and then switch later. But the fact that he totally, removed himself from the property, relinquished any control of the property for a period of 5 years, that doesn't make so much sense in a partnership. On the other hand, if it's unable to be divided or subdivided, then the only way to have the partnership or divide is what? One guy to be on there for 5 years, and then the other guy to be there in 5 years. So then again, it won't establish chazakah, because that is the normal way to have a partnership in this case, because it wouldn't be kedai to split it. If it's not divisible, then neither one of them would make sense. They could have the property. So now, again, that'll explain the difference in Shmuel's opinion. Again, I think it comes back to the same concept, which is what's normal in a partnership and what's not normal in a partnership. If it's normal, you can't establish a chazakah that way. If it's not normal, then you could establish a chazakah unless it's documented in your partnership agreement. Right now, Gufa, Amar Shmuel, Shutaf Kiyoreid B'Shut Dami. Shmuel makes a basic statement. That's where we inferred from that he can establish he cannot establish a chazakah, that a Shutaf goes down with permission. My Kamash Malan. What is Shmuel teaching us? Shutvot ein lo chazakah. If he's coming to teach us that shutafim cannot establish a chazakah on one another, lema, let him be explicit and say shutaf ein lo chazakah. Wouldn't that be a better line for Shmuel? If Shmuel is coming to teach us simply that one fact, that a shutaf cannot establish a chazakah on his partner, let him say it. The fact that he worded it, that a shutaf is kiyorei b'shutami, must be that's teaching us something else. What else is it teaching us besides that they can't establish a chazakah? And that's what the Marav Nachman and Marav Baravua Lomar comes to teach us, Shnotel b'shevach ha-magila ketfayim, that he's allowed to take in the shevach ha-magila ketfayim, b'sada she'en asu liyata, k'sada asuya lita. That in a field that is not planted, like a field that is planted. Right, it's a pretty cryptic statement in the Gemara. I will go back to the Gemara in Baba Metzia. If you remember, we had this Gemara in Baba Metzia early on. I think it's on Daf Yubet in Baba Metzia. We also had it in Kiddushin with what's called Shevach HaMagia LeKetfayim. What is Shevach HaMagia LeKetfayim? Rashi defines, Shevach HaMagia LeKetfayim is Devar HaOmed LiVatzer. Something that is so ripe, something that is so done that it's ready to be picked on the field. Right? Anything that's ready to be taken off the field, that's Shevach HaMagia LeKetfayim. The Rabbeinu Tam disagreed in both those places, and the Rabbeinu Tam gave two alternative explanations of what Shevach HaMagia LeKetfayim is. In one place, he said Shevach HaMagia LeKetfayim is something about Bali Dei Torah. Something that is what that comes from investment in the property. Shevach Mamela, something that the property that goes up in value passively without you doing anything active, that is not Shevach HaMagila Ketfayim. HaMagila Ketfayim is where you actively invest in the property, right, and take it out. That was one definition the Rabbeinu Tam gave. The second definition the Rabbeinu Tam gave was Shevach HaMagila Ketfayim is something you can carry off the property. Something that can be carried off the property is Shevach HaMagila Ketfayim. Something that's a part of the property or belongs to the property, that is Shevach She'en HaMagila Ketfayim. That's the definition. Now, over here, this is this big Tosfos, the massive Tosfos here, brings Rashi's pshat, brings down the Rabbeinu Tam's pshat, and goes through all the different sugyas and shas, or places where it's mentioned, and says, this is one place where it's very difficult for Rashi to explain what's going on. So we will explain it based on the Rabbeinu Tam, and then we'll later on try to figure out what Rashi does. So Rabbeinu Tam says, you have two partners here. Two partners own a property. Now the property is zoned, right, or classified only to be used shlolita, not for planting, not for putting trees there. It's done for estate dvoah, it's done for grains, for vegetables, that's what you plant here. This individual, one of the shutafim, goes down without permission of the other shutaf and goes and makes it into a estate ilan. He plants trees there and makes it into a estate ilan. Now he put in all the effort, he did all the expenditures, and he went ahead and did it without the knowledge or, right, acquiescence of his other partner over here. So when he does that, what is his status? So we know, in general, when someone goes, you went into your friend's property, say you saw his friend's property there, you went and you did him a favor, you went ahead and you plowed his property, you planted on his property, you did it for him. What's the din there? The din is that you have the yado ala tachtona. All you get is, you get the lesser of the shevach or the yitziot. The lesser of the benefit that you provided or the yitziot or the expenditures. When do you get to be treated to a priority claim on the property? When he hires you as an aris or a shotel. And that he hires you to go work his property, he says, listen, you go down there, you'll work it, and then you'll get a percentage, right, of the outclaim. So now, that he'd be classified as an aris. So that's what the first statement. The Gemara says here, that a shutaf that goes down, but sadesh ain't a suilita, because sadeh a suilita. When he goes down there, when it's a property that was not meant for planting trees, and nevertheless he does plant trees on it, it's as if he went down with permission. So if he goes down like permission, he becomes an aris on the property. What does that mean? That means that he will get a first payout as an aris. Meaning that he went down, he'll get a priority payout as a manager of there, the worker on the field, he'll get a payout. The remainder will be split 50-50 as partners because they are partners in the residual amount. So you have a priority claim of the individual who worked the property because he invested in the property. And then, right, he gets the other remainder, whatever's left over afterwards, gets split 50-50 between the partners. What is that about? Where does he get a priority claim? Only on Shevach HaMagia Ad HaKetfayim. Where does he get? He gets a priority claim on stuff that he invested to create value. If the property went up in value by itself, then he doesn't get a priority claim as an aris to that. He didn't do anything to make that value up. That's still 50-50 in the partnership. What he gets a priority claim to is what he invested in the property. So that's the two statements of the Gemara. When Shmuel says that a Shutaf is considered like going down with permission, this is what it means. One, he's considered like he's going down with permission so that he gets to be treated like an aris, not like the lower, the yado al tachtono, the lower of the yitziot to the shevach. And number two is, he gets it, what? A shevach hamegi al ketfayim. Whatever he invested, or whatever he did to make the property value go up, on that he gets a priority claim. So for instance, if a aris, generally, when you go down and plant a property on behalf of someone else, it's a 30-70 split. Alright, so the aris gets 30% of the value for what he did, and the 70% remains for the owner. So now in this case, he'll get 30% on what he invests. The remaining 70%, the partners will split 35-35. So he'll end up getting 65% of the value. The other individual will get 35. But that's only true, again, with value generated by his investment in the property. That is Shmuel's explanation, the explanation of what Shmuel means that a shutaf goes down with permission. Now, Rashi is much more difficult over here. Rashi, who says that the idea of Shevach Megayet Kadvayim is stuff that is ready to be picked. So that's ready to get picked. What does that have to do, right, with the property here? What does that have to do with Sulita, Lola Sulita? The Gemara could have ended that he has permission. Lotar Shevach Megayet Kadvayim. That's it. The Gemara could end it over there. The fact that he has permission, not permission about the whether it was made to be, you know, planted or not made to plant. The fact is that there are fruits here that are ready to be picked to pick up the plants. What's the chap over here? So the Tosus does try to explain Rashi, which is interesting. So he says, I could, but dochak, I could explain Rashi. And he's just over here, just read it to me. Yishli ashe peritha kundris. It's at the bottom. It's 2-4 lines from the bottom of this big Tosus over here. Nefarish haida shoel, kam adam rotzeli tein besad de zulun ota, de lav hainu kedin aris. That this doesn't have a din of an aris. Person who says to, how much would you take to plant this property and take care of it? They don't have a din of an aris, but rather, to the aris, notim yoter le mechsa or the shlish, we give them much higher percentages. Ki osek ba'al le takna kamitz rachim. Over there, an aris is someone who stays on a property. Not only does he plant the property, but he also stays on afterwards to take care of the property. Therefore, he's entitled to a higher percentage of the output. But here, we're talking about a kablan, or a contractor, which is hired to simply, he's a gardener, he's hired not to take care of the property, simply to plant the property. Over there, kam adam rotzeh liten le kablan li tasa dezu. How much would a person do get paid just to plant this field? Lo yorabad le erisut amiyad notel scharo. He gets paid immediately. So then, he gets paid more than a day laborer, but he gets paid less than an aris, or less percentage than the aris. So now, the question is, v'hachi kamar. So now, over here, the top of Mem Gimel Ava, shenotel b'shevach ha-megel ketfayim ka-aris. That he gets to get the shevach ha-megel ken-aris, shelo yistalku oto, kamo kablan. That his right here is that, like an aris, he turns into aris and not a kablan. Someone who goes down without permission to plant the property, what do you do with him? You throw him out. If he went without permission to plant the property, you throw him out and you pay the less of the tziot and shevach, but he gets thrown out right away. So what is the statement of Shmuel here means that a shutaf doesn't get thrown out. Even though he planted without permission of the partnership, when he plants there, he becomes like an aris, which means he has permission to stay on afterwards to work the property and to continue to develop the property. If that's the case, right, afilu mistadeh asuya litab, seyashena asuya perish. So that's exactly it. He gets in this property like someone who would have gone down with permission. Still a hard definition because all that he gets is b'shevach ha-megel ketfayim. That's where he gets the split, which is stuff that's omed li batzer, stuff that is ready to be ripened or ready to be picked, I guess, when this issue comes up. So on that, he gets a right to take his priority claim. But anything else, he doesn't get a priority claim according to that explanation of Rashi. Okay, we'll stop over here.